Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Orient Hour here at Phoenix FM. I'm delighted to say tonight we have our former head coach, Ross Embleton, and our former left-back, left-wing, certainly never left in the changing room, James Brophy. I am delighted to also say that I'm joined tonight by our regular host, Kerrin Harrison, who's also, as you all know by now, the Membership Secretary of the Supporters Club.
Hello, everyone. We've got,
hi, Kerrin. We've got Lee Boyce. You well, Lee?
Yeah, all good, Darren. Thanks.
Good stuff. And last but by certainly no means least, we are delighted to say we've also got joining us Jacob Branson, who is the sports reporter at Argent, and he covers the mighty Leighton Orient. Jacob, lovely to have you on. Welcome to the show, sir.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We're going to start tonight with you, James, if we may. Lee's got the first of what's going to be many, many testing questions for you, James, I can assure you, about your time at the O's. Lee, good to see you, sir.
Yeah, James, thanks for joining us, and Ross too. Basically, we're going to go right back to the beginning with you, James, if that's all right.
Of course.
Your loan move, you're coming. We've just been taken over. We've started the season quite brightly, really, considering the circumstances, and you've come in on loan. I mean, how did that come about?
I suffered a relegation with Swindon, started the League Two campaign under the new manager. I played for about a month and then found my way out of the team, searching for football. Obviously, I'd stayed in contact with Ross since he'd left Swindon and come to Orient. And he asked would I be interested in coming to Orient on loan, which was something I jumped at, to be honest, to play with Ross or for Ross and Steve Davis and to come and play football, really. So, yeah, it was something that come up through mine and Ross's relationship and something that I jumped at.
I mean, like, when you come in under Steve Davis, I mean, like I say, we started reasonably well and then things went a bit the other way, let's say. Like, I mean, how was your original loan spell? How did you find it?
I enjoyed it. We didn't win a lot of games, but I enjoyed it myself, playing football.
You sound like a proper Leighton Orient fan, eh?
To be honest, I was more worried that after the loan move that I wouldn't be allowed to come back because we hadn't done that great.
Was that your intention to come back?
I enjoyed the loan spell, really did, to come and play football again, enjoyed the club. And was disappointed to be called back, really, because I knew with him being called back that there was no real direction or I couldn't progress any further having been called back to the parent club.
I mean, to both of you, really, Ross, as well. I mean, how was that time under Steve Davis? Like that sort of that period that you was there, James? Like, I mean, like I say, you didn't win a game. Things started to go a bit. I wouldn't say pear-shaped, it was hard times. But, I mean, how was it for both of you sort of working there?
I think, Lee, what's quite interesting, probably first of all, before we go on to what it was like, was the story in which James was called back. People are probably not aware of, unless you were on the coach going to Torquay away, which I'm sure for anybody that was at that game, it was a miserable occasion. But I had done a session the day before, knowing we were travelling to Torquay. Obviously, that length of time and distance. Done a session the day before on the Thursday to prepare us for the team shape that we were going to play. And it was the first time, actually, probably in hindsight, probably a good thing for me because I'd moved James out of the position. So God knows what uproar that would have caused at the time had I played him elsewhere other than left wing or even left back. So we'd done a load of work on James playing in a number 10 position off of, I can't remember who it was now. Who would it have been, the striker, bro, that we would have had down the middle? It wasn't Moons because I know I'd left him out at the time, but I'll come back. I'll tell you what, it was Matt Harold. So Matt Harold was starting down the middle and James was playing as the number 10 off the front. And we'd done a whole tactical session on it on the Thursday the day before. And as I was getting to the Marriott, pulling up in my car, bro phones me and says, this is a nightmare. And I went, wow, what, you stuck in traffic, mate? And he went, I'm on the M4. So we're doing going on. He said, I've been called back. I said, you haven't. He said, I have. Swindon phoned me this morning and said, you're being called back. You've got to come back to the club today. You're going to be involved with us tomorrow. So I'm getting on the coach. one player down. I think we had to put a young, I think it might have been Ruel at the time, had to put him on the train to Torquay to get him up there so that we had the right amount of players. But I had to, we trained at Bristol City that afternoon, or that, yeah, that afternoon, and I had to get out of the coach and then reconvince the players that we'd, we were changing the way that we were going to play from the day before because Broth had been called back. So they were probably circumstances not too many people are aware of. But I think from my perspective, the crazy run we went on under Steve was surreal. I think that's one of the words I would use to describe it, was that there was a lot of games, certainly at the beginning of that period, where I don't think we deserved to lose. I remember Macclesfield at home, them scoring just before and just after half-time. And there were so many games like that, like Macca had hit the post, or just things just sort of didn't seem to go our way. And it just got harder and harder and harder to lift. And I don't think we were like, I think I can only really remember one or two. The final game before Steve went was really bad away to Ebbsfleet. And there was a home game, I think, against Chester or Halifax, I think it was, where we changed quite a lot on the night, that we were poor. But outside of that, I didn't think we were like horrendous. And it was so surreal to keep losing games and dropping points. And it was a really tough run to find our way out of.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd concur with that. I think it got to a point towards the end where it just felt that everything was going against us, which sometimes happens in football. Look, when you're doing well, everything seems to go for you and you build momentum, and that's what happens. And then it also happens the other way, that when you're not doing so well, it seems that every little thing is going against you. And I think towards the end, going on that longer run probably drained a lot of people's confidence, as it would do. And it felt that every kind of little thing was going against us.
But you still signed permanently, James. So you saw enough at the club to want to come and join us permanently.
Yeah, I think we had a good group. There was the majority of the group was a really good group. I got along with everyone. The most important thing to me is wanting to play football. I've come from non-league and worked my way up. All I want out of football is to play football. So I come to a club where I knew at the time the assistant manager had a lot of faith in me, and that I would get a fair crack at playing.
Which you did, and it proved to be a good decision because you're a National League champion as a result.
Yeah, which is a nice feeling. Yeah, very nice feeling.
And when you signed for the club, it was initially a 2-year contract you signed, James, with the club?
Bloody hell, I don't know. It might have been year and a half.
Okay.
I think it might have been 2.5.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And at that time, when you signed, did you sort of have a feeling that we were going to go on that kind of run that we eventually went on under Justin and Ross? Because it come about, didn't it, the back end of that season, we did ever so well, didn't we? We finished really strongly, guys, didn't we, in the campaign? And then we just carried that momentum on and got that coveted promotion, that championship.
Yeah,
did you feel that?
Yeah, I think the relationship between, well, he can say it more than me, but from a player's point of view, the relationship between Ross and Gaffer worked really well. Mm. They understood each other's roles and responsibilities, and they kind of left each other to do that. Gaffer was there on the training pitch every day. Ross was carrying out a lot of the tactical stuff that Gaffer had asked for, and it was a real nice balance to it. Everything was really well organised. So from a player's point of view, there wasn't really much. I always say it, players are like school kids. They need structure and discipline. And from that point of view, we had that throughout that whole season, which left it easier for the group to get on with, because all we had to do really was play football and win games.
I think what else happened, Darren, was I think it's really important that you touch upon that 12 game, 13 game period, whatever it was, at the back end of that season, because obviously quickly we, after the Solihull away game, we quickly started to look like the team that we'd started the season to look like. And like James said there, the group was a good group. And I think throughout that rough period that we all went through, there was very little falling out. There was very little like people going against each other. Obviously people were upset and frustrated, but it never really boiled over to that. And I think a lot of it was because of the group, and I think partly the reason we got and recruited players like Broth was because of the scale of the club and what we were trying to do, and he'd been able to experience that, but also the group of players that we had together. And that 10-12 game period, we would spend in the huddle before the game, and pretty much whether it was myself or Joby or any of the lads that had an input at that time, we all kept talking about what the end of this season was going to do to the momentum for the season after. And clearly we started and come out the traps, didn't we? And there was very little time to turn back and look behind us because we'd built up such momentum. And I think, bro, when we got back for the start of pre-season, we went away to Portugal, all them things, it was like, it felt like something very, very special could have been achieved.
Lee's laughing because I think you were on that trip, Lee, weren't you, to Portugal?
What a trip that was. What a great trip.
And I have a confession. I've been to Portugal many times and I love the place and I was so jealous of you guys. You look like you're having great fun out there. And again, as Ross alluded to there, you could tell Ross that the camaraderie, we got a lot of clips sent back. And, you know, Lee, you were out there, weren't you, as I say, and you saw that, didn't you, firsthand as well?
I mean, I remember, when you come down the pub to meet us down in the pub, and I remember a few people saying, no one thought there was going to be any fans there if it was turned up to an empty bar sort of thing. And then when you see how many fans are actually out there, it sort of like, really, oh, man, how much it was all meaning to everyone sort of thing. But, I mean, it was a fantastic trip. We loved it, and great game of football, plenty of goals, right? You know what I mean? Don't think we deserve to lose it, but it's just a phenomenal little trip there. Little team bonding.
I think that's the hardest part. Look, with the lower league football, you almost have a fairly new group every year. You sometimes keep a lot of the core, but it's how quickly you can blend in new players. And straight away from that, like Ross said, even the last games of the previous season, however, that pre-season, there was just such a strong connection between the group. Everyone understood what they'd have to sacrifice for this year, and everyone was on board with it. Obviously, look, 11 people can only play every game and you can only make 3 subs, but we needed everyone that year. I remember sharing with Joe Widdowson, and I think the first game, Salford, I come on, I was on the bench, and I think for a lot of the start of the season, I was used as more of an impact player. And I used to say to Joey in the hotel room, I said, I can speak to Gaffer on a Monday, Tuesday on the training ground. I said, and you cannot play under him, or you can be on the bench or at the squad, and he still somehow makes you feel like the best player in the team. So you go to speak to him about maybe playing, and then you leave the conversation thinking you're the best player ever, even though you haven't played.
it's a rarity, though, isn't it? It's amazing to be able to work under someone like that, isn't it?
Yes,
just to show what great man management skills they had, didn't it?
Yeah. James Alabi was a great example, and Harold, weren't they? Matt Harold, and how they always managed to make an impact coming off the bench. And you worked your way into the team, James, though, very nicely, didn't you? And it's interesting you mentioned the number 10 role, because the few times I did see you play there, and Ross, you played James a couple of times, forgive me if it was more. I always liked seeing you there, James. Is that sort of... We've had this, Ross, haven't we, before? We've had this question. The poor old Ross has heard this one so many times. But we're going to ask it. Where's your preferred role, James? Where do you want to play? Given the choice, where does James Brophy want to play?
I asked him to play in 4, but he wouldn't let me. I honestly, we had a start. We had a conversation, I think, at the end of. I get mixed up between the seasons.
Yeah, last season.
And it was like an end of season performance review. And I asked Ross how we saw the team playing this season. I think I suit different positions depending on how the team is set up to play. He come across with how he wants to play. I said I felt my best position in that system would be left back. I have no qualms about playing in. Knows as well as me, no qualms about playing anywhere on the pitch. I always tease that I'd like to play centre half in the 4, in the 10, but unfortunately I can't play them all. However, we had a discussion in the off season, and I said in the system and how we wanted to play, I saw myself as a left back in that team.
I think I can speak for everybody, Lee and Kieran and Jacob, and I say I don't think there's ever been a player since or before that's caused so much amongst fans and debate about where your best position was, James. And, you know, in fairness, James, it's not the first time I've heard you give that answer about playing left back as well. And I felt for you, Ross, you seem to be getting pulled all over the place and you couldn't do wrong for right where James was playing was concerned. What I would say about James as well, and again, I think I speak for everybody, wherever you played James, you were the kind of character and kind of person that you did give it your best wherever you were asked to play. And that's something that, you know, we're sorely going to miss. I think everything I've seen on Twitter since you signed for Cambridge is we've lost a good one there, we've lost a great player. I like to think we're a great bunch of Orients. We all wish you well because that's the right thing to do, and we generally mean that. But what made you leave, James? I've got to ask the question. I've got to put it to you. What made you make the decision?
It goes back really. There was a few things. I wouldn't say there was ultimately one thing. I felt like my performances over the last two seasons had been consistent enough to play in League One again. I felt I'd hit a standard that I expected of myself, that it warranted being able to or capable of playing in League One. Out of football, I just want to play as high as I can, test myself and see how high my abilities will get me. That was one key reason. The second one was meeting the Cambridge manager. He put across to me how he saw me playing in their team, which is actually further up the pitch. But he told me how he saw me playing in the team, and it was something I could relate to. I did meet the current Orient manager because there was a contract offer sent to me before he signed, to get an understanding of if I was to stay, how he would see me playing. There wasn't enough for me. I didn't feel there was enough to.
Not enough clarity, James. Is that the right word?
Yeah, clarity, and there wasn't. I didn't feel a connection where I could. I knew he trusted in my abilities, and I would be able to trust him to play me, which ultimately led to me leaving. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for your honesty. Sorry, Lee.
And I remember Mark Bonner from when he was at Southend Academy, and he's always had a great footballing philosophy, the way he wanted to play his football. So, I mean, that's probably going to be right up your street, isn't it, really?
I think what you get with Mark, because I know Mark really well, and obviously for obvious reasons, he contacted me about Brough when he was looking to sign him or try to sign him, and one of the things I said to him was, and I think this might answer some of the questions that Darren's alluded to in some of his questions, is that he said to me about him playing higher up the pitch, and I said, if you sign him, I think he's one of the best left wingers that you can go and get. For me, he's one of the best left wingers that you can go and sign in this transfer window. In terms of the character that he's getting, et cetera, I said. And then the flip side of that was, in my opinion, if you want to sign him as a left back, you sign the best left back there is in League Two, in my opinion. So I couldn't have complimented him anymore. But I think what I knew would have been the case. Excuse me. What would have been the case immediately when Brough met Mark would have been that him outlining exactly what his expectations would have been of him, what he sees of him. And I think as a player, you want those reassurances. If you're going to sign, re-sign, move on, stay at the club that you're going to go and whatever the decision is you're going to make, you want to know that you're going to be loved, adored and given the very best opportunity for your abilities to flourish. And I know, having obviously worked with James for a long time, that he needs that support to try to get the very best out of him. So I think it's going to turn out to be a really good move for both club and player.
Go on, I was just going to butt in there. One for Ross, I suppose. Like you said, he's probably the best left back in League Two and one of the best wingers he could go and get. I suppose from a coaching standpoint as well, I know you come in for a lot of stick, but how much of a pleasure is it to have such a versatile player that can sort of play in so many positions? It's such an asset, isn't it?
It, very much so, yeah. And someone that's willing to do it and wants to do it. I think like when he makes it, when Brough makes a joke out of, he wants to play as a holding midfield player and wants to play as a centre half. I had to tempt him sometimes out of wanting to play in goal after training, staying in goal for the lad's shots and stuff. But I think the other side of it as well, Jake, was that when Just first took over, Just played in right wing. So and that never ever got mentioned. Do you know what I mean? So a little bit like when Brough said earlier about when things drop your way and go your way when things are going well or vice versa when they're not. Just played him wide right in a four man midfield and probably a new experience for both to play as well. And then obviously we've mentioned that number 10 role. So it's not alien for both to be moved around, not just by me, but by other people that have worked with him. And then when we go back to the time period, even before I went to Swindon and worked with him, he was playing as a left back there. Went more further in once I'd been there for him, both played more as a left wing back. So that's, I think, probably five positions there that I've named that he's played in league football, League One, and the National League. So, like you say, there was a lot of opinion on those decisions. But he has been versatile enough to operate in different areas of the pitch at a better level than the levels we were playing at as well.
I know it's on Wikipedia at the day that they've got you down as Cambridge United left back. So I'll take it. That's all been sorted for next season. And no arguments about that.
I've got the login for his Wikipedia page, Lee.
you start a meltdown, Ross.
I was just about to say, Ross edited it. I think in the FA Trophy final, I actually ended up playing right wing back.
I think you might have replaced Turley in that role, didn't you?
Yeah, I think I finished the game there, yeah.
That's just like having an extra player on the pitch.
It's certainly every club at that level needs versatility in the squad, don't they? And James, you provided that for the couple of years you gave the Ori. Can I ask the million-dollar question to you, Ross, if that's okay? What are you doing now, sir? What's Ross Embleton doing with himself? And is there another move back into management imminent? And tell us, certainly
not imminent. This is probably the highlight of my day today, other than what going out for lunch with the missus, walking the dog, and trying to get fit and avoid when I get back being in football that I look like a little fat bloke. So nothing at the minute, mate. Obviously keen to look at what's out there and what opportunities there are. I don't know directly if that involves management, I've got to be honest.
Because we've seen your link with the Dover job. I take it there's no truth in that then.
Yeah, God knows where that one came from.
We didn't think so, if I'm
honest. I don't even know where that one come from. To be honest, so far, to be totally upfront, as I always try to be, I haven't applied for anything as yet. Tracked I had with the club, obviously the time in which I lost my job until the end of the season, obviously there's timescales where I need to try to make the right decision. I think I probably would say that one of my objections or reasons for looking outside or away from management is the vulnerability of it all. I look at some of the people that have lost their jobs even since I've gone, you know. Bless his little heart, but Mark Cooper loses his job when he's in the playoffs. You know, whatever my opinions are on Mark, I think it's absolutely outright ridiculous that a manager gets a sack while a team are in the playoffs. Whatever went on at Tranmere, they went from being the worst team I've seen this season at the bottom end of the league to the playoffs. And the week before the playoffs final goes, the manager gets a sack. And I look at that and I think, really? Is that really how it operates for people that have been successful, you know? So, a load of things to weigh up, Darren. So I can't answer your question outright as much as I'd like to, mate. But not a lot is the direct answer I can give you at the moment.
That dog must be very fit by now, Ross.
he's pounding the streets early in the morning and late in the evening.
And I just rewind the clock, Ross, and just sort of ask you how you sort of found the step up to management as a whole, obviously sort of always being a coach and an assistant. And then obviously with the unfortunate circumstances and then obviously it seemed like you grew into the role more and then perhaps the targets changed and it was a bit of a roller coaster, really.
Yeah, I think the easiest thing for me to acknowledge now is obviously I've had a lot of time to think about certain things. And I think the first thing is that I loved being the assistant. You know, both mentioned there about how me and Just seemed to click. And don't forget, by the way, that Webby's part in that was massive as well. You know, without wouldn't ever want him to be forgotten about in terms of the role that he played within that as well. But in terms of a manager and assistant, we just clicked, and that was great. But what I would say as well is I loved working with Steve. So I really, really enjoyed that role, and it did take me a hell of a long time to understand about being a manager, about seeing myself as being the manager more than anything else. The biggest thing I didn't enjoy was having to try to maintain or find a way of having relationships with some of the existing players and some of the ones that weren't playing. I found that very, very difficult, which is always going to be the case. But when you've got existing relationships with some people and they find it very difficult to look you in the eye or shake your hands in the morning, it makes it hard to go to work. Do you know what I mean? And I am the way I am, and things like that do affect me. So I look back on that a little bit as one of the things that I didn't enjoy about it. But I don't think I'd find myself in that position were I to go back in to a role, because, you know, my loyalties and my relationships with players before would be different ones, until I obviously signed Brof back, obviously.
Yeah, and I suppose it was the
sort of a cheap release clause
and the fact of the tight knit that you perhaps were in different situations and relationships than normal.
Yeah, it's not normal. None of it's normal, is it? You know, you don't want to bring it up in too big a detail, but you've only got to see the impact of what's happened during the Euros tournament with Ericsson over the last little while, and what effects that can have on people. And you know, we've lived that with the worst outcome possible, haven't we? So it was horrific circumstances to go into. But probably what I would say from a selfish perspective was the first half of that season, no one had a clue what they were doing coming to work every day. So it probably did give me a little bit of time to work out what it was supposed to be all about. Obviously, I never quite got there, but you know, over a period of time, I think I did grow into the role, and it, you know, it'd be up for people's opinions to decide whether I was any good at it or not. But I think I did improve. I think I showed signs of becoming better at the job the longer I was in it. It was obviously the last little bit that didn't go according to plan.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose I'll ask this one to both of you, but maybe Ross first. Obviously, the goals sort of changed, didn't they, mid-season, given the league was open and whatnot. And I suppose that's probably quite hard to change your mindset to, given that you sort of were probably punching above your weight and then started to go a tad bit wrong, I suppose.
Yeah, I think Brof might be able to tell you in a little bit more detail about, you know, about with regards to punching above our weight. But I think I actually think that if there wasn't as much come out about the change towards us going up and getting in the playoffs this season, and I understand it, by the way. Cambridge go up, we, you know, as a Leighton Orient fan, you would be disappointed that you don't finish above Cambridge. Morecambe get promoted. Everybody in the league will be going, wow, Morecambe's budget, they've gone and achieved an incredible amount. And they will have a massive impact on a lot of clubs spending this summer, because a lot of chairmen will be sitting there going, well, hold on, if Morecambe can do it in the way that they did it, why can't we? So they are freaks, not one-offs, because, you know, they're not that lowly in terms of what they achieved. But what I think is that if there hadn't been so much made about you know, us going from finishing probably where the club finished to getting promoted or getting in the playoffs as a bare minimum, I actually think this season could have been viewed upon as another stepping stone in the right direction. I think we've said before that finishing 17th on the last one, I think we would have finished in a more improved position than that, because we looked like we were starting to get a grips of it all. So anything beyond that would have been seen as a progression, and that's what the club has done. Do you know what I mean? We finished 11th, but because we've all been involved in conversations about the playoffs and getting promoted, now everybody or a lot of people started to see it as it wasn't quite so good. But it's the second season, it's a kick on, and it gives the club a platform to move forward again. So frustrating from our perspective, but it's life. Well, no, I won't say it's life. It's part and parcel of being involved in the game that we all love for some crazy reason.
and James, your time at the club, as we say, has come to an end now. And you won the National League as a player, which when you win a title at any club, you rightly get legendary status, and, you know, as we've said about people like James Alaba, he's a legend because he was part of that squad and he contributed like you did. Can you think of, other than winning the league, what were the standout moments at your time at Orion? What is there a goal? Was there a moment that you look back on? And I'm going to ask you, Ross, the same question in a second, if that's okay.
So, I've got a feeling we might say the same one, but we've never had this conversation.
Okay, well, that's great, great. Let's ask the question then. James, what was your standout?
We're going to say the same one.
I've got a feeling we might, but may not. Go on.
Eastleigh.
My first answer was going to be Marbella after we won the league.
Y'all weren't there.
Yeah, I know. That was going to be my first answer. time Orient. What am I going to say?
What goal? What one goal, I think, was what Darren
asked. Was there a goal? Was there a goal or a standout moment like a goal? I remember you scoring, I think it was Chesterfield away for a 1-0 win. You know, I remember that.
That was Dates.
That was a good finish.
I think your first goal was against Chester, wasn't it? Header or shoulder.
Yes.
Yeah.
That one I was talking about. I remember that. That set us up for a 1-0 win up there.
Yes.
Right. I mean, you scored away at Northampton. I still don't think Matt Harrold ever intended that pass, but we're much bigger than me, so we'll say, actually, no, of course he intended that pass, but that was a great finish as well.
I'm trying to work out what you're going to say. Wrexham away was a good goal.
Oh, what a goal. Wrexham away, yeah, for us 2-0. Yeah, that was great.
Wrexham away, I enjoyed a lot.
I think we all did. Your performance that day was superb as a team.
My best moment, there was a lot of good moments. I think the feeling when we won the league, on the pitch after the game, everyone afterwards, that feeling will never be beaten for me. Because it's so unique. I don't know numbers and like the amount of people every year that achieve a promotion. But I think they're very few and far between in your career. And there's something that you probably spend your whole childhood dreaming of, and then your whole career working towards. So then to actually get that feeling, to come top, to win it, title, you can't replicate it. The only shame is it's gone so quickly. But it's the one thing that you constantly remember.
James, following on from that, is my next question.
I want to know...
The goal I remember most is Eastleigh. Right,
Eastleigh
at home to Eastleigh, that game, didn't it? 3-2, so we won that game against Eastleigh and changed the rest of the season. But for both of you, I mean, it was eating your fingers, like, well, down, going past your nails, we're all down to our finger bones now, and it up until that Eastleigh game. How was it in the team? From both sides, from the coaching and the players' sides. I mean, we sort of get a bit edgy. Salford looked like they were about to run away with it. How did you stay calm and keep going, Knight?
I think certainly that's my moment, not just for Brof and the goal that Brof scored, but that for me was like the moment where I look back and I think we're going to win it now. Actually, during the time I didn't, because it's the worst, like you said, Lee, you're sitting there and you're constantly looking over your shoulder, wondering if the result don't go right or you're playing at a different time. Obviously, we had the cup run and Salford, Solihull were playing at different times to us and they'd drop a point or however it would work. And there were so many twists and tails going towards it all. But I think that goal that night, we'd done a lot of work that week on stopping Paul McCallum and he scored two headers in the first half. But I remember I was actually on the touchline after getting sent off in the stands after getting sent off against Bromley, and I remember coming down to the changing room at half time, and going, I just went to just, no, if we don't change, we're going to win this. We're going to win it. If we don't change, carry on going the way we are. We're going to win this. Just stay calm. And I don't know why, but that night I had such a belief, and when Sam cut it back and both put it in the net, I think that was a massive turning point that I think you really started to feel that we had a chance to go on and do it then, because there was so much belief in what everyone was trying to do. So I think there was a because of the way that just was as a bloke, it sent reassurance through everybody. Yeah. I remember after I got sent off against Bromley, coming in the next day and saying to him, I'm so sorry, like you know, we'd had the emotion of the first game and the V kit and all that sort of stuff, and it going off after the game against Bromley and Caroma and George Porter, all that sort of stuff. I just got caught up. I've let everyone down, blah, blah. And he was brilliant. He was brilliant about that. But because he was so big dog, broth, in the way that he approached everything, I think it just kept everybody calm. And it wasn't until the Solihull game that I saw him show any nerves. That was the first time I saw him really, really on edge.
Yeah.
Other than that, there was never a moment.
What I was going to say.
There was never a moment where I felt like any of us were under real pressure. He just sucked it all up.
Yeah. From a player's point of view, that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, we won the league, but I never really felt nervous throughout that season. And it was probably because how we communicated it and how we laid across to ourselves. Like, easily we scored two goals very quickly, didn't we? The second and the third. One of them, not my one, the second one, I think we score literally from like a goal kick. We go end to end in about 10 seconds and score a goal out of nothing. And then there's Sutton. Is it Sutton? Sutton away. Always remember when Lacker gets the pen. There were some games where we didn't play great, but we didn't feel under pressure as players. And like I said, when you're doing well, sometimes things go for you. And towards the end of that season, just everything was falling into place for us. We didn't really need to do anything.
Won the league on 2-0.
the atmosphere at Solihull, the penultimate game, we pretty much knew that Leighton Orient weren't going to lose 6-0 at home to Braintree. You know, that was never going to happen. And we felt, I think there, Kevin and Lee, and I don't know if you were there, Jacob, we felt as fans, we thought that was our moment. And we were lucky enough to have tickets because it was a bit of a restricted away allocation. And that was a moment I felt that you as players come over and embrace the fact that you knew it as well, James and Ross. So did you feel that at that point in time as well? Did you feel like how we felt at that point, or was you still, no, there's job to be done, no, we've got to go out and be professional? And what was the feeling amongst the camp when you were that close?
I felt it before kickoff. I remember thinking, I don't ever remember. I don't think Oxford away was like that before the game. I don't remember being anywhere with Orient staff in the stand celebrating. I don't remember an atmosphere like that before the game. It was mental. And I just remember thinking, this can't go wrong. Like, it can't be like this and it go wrong. It was the worst, I think probably one of the worst games of football I've ever been involved in my life. There was nerves. It was Solihull played the football that they played. It was a terrible game of football, but the atmosphere was unbelievable. And like you said there, the final was a surreal one because everyone wanted to start the party. But I think there were so many of us at the same time that thought, hold on a minute, this is Leighton Orient. There's every chance something can go wrong. I hated the Braintree game until the final whistle went. I hated it because I just thought, no, something's going to go wrong and they're going to win 8-0 or something. I just hated it.
That was horrible to play in.
But the Solihull game was, the atmosphere was like nothing I've ever experienced before.
Well, that Braintree game, I mean, I knew Danny Sell, the manager. I've known Danny for years. And I remember when he got appointed, and I said to some of my mates, I said, like, this fella, ain't, if it comes down to the last day of the season, this fella's going to get Braintree playing football. So if it comes down to the last day of the season, that ain't going to be a given. And everyone's laughing, like, you know what I mean? And of course, he got down, and I was just so grateful that it was like, we needed something, but we didn't actually need something. Because like I said, I know Danny would have loved to have had run over us on there. But fair play to him, because he stood on the pitch and he just lapped up all the jubilation that we was going through. Like, you know what I mean? Nice fella, Danny. But I was glad we didn't actually need a big win.
Because James, you say you love to play, and it's great to hear that's your motivation, is you want to play football. Yeah, that was the one game you just wanted over with, didn't you? You didn't want to play that game. You didn't want to hit the pedal.
Without a doubt. I think, to be honest, I think I should have made it easier because I think I was through with Caroma 2-1 and I couldn't even square him the ball. That I just wanted that game over with. I think we could have easily won it. But like you said, that was a game that I was just waiting for the final whistle.
And let the celebrations begin.
Yeah.
Great memories.
So we move on now to getting back onto sort of more current times. And James, you know, you're off to passing you with Cambridge, and good luck with that. Ross, you're actively or not actively, you're patiently waiting for your next gig. what do you guys do to fill your summer? It's a time, it's a chance for you, isn't it? You've got a few weeks off before the pressure. What are you getting away on holiday because of the situation, the world's in a difficult time? Or are you the kind of guys that, you know what, I just want the season to start. I just want to start playing. James, you strike me as you're itching to go.
I made you to play football. I've done a run today. I'm not edging to run. normally summer, yeah, is as soon as the season finishes to try and go away. And then a few weeks before pre-season, you now got to do your pre-season and get yourself fit. But obviously this summer is a bit different to all of them. So because last year we had two seasons felt morphed into one, because we had a lot of time off, obviously, because of COVID. However, you were always wondering what was going on and you were constantly trying to keep yourself fit because you didn't know when the season was starting. So it's the first summer we've had off for two seasons. So I haven't really gone away. I've just enjoyed being here and being able to do nothing.
I'd imagine your grass is very well kept now, James, and Ross, yours too, that you've been able to improve your gardening skills in the last couple of weeks at least, and look forward
to... Yeah, very much so. I think what's a big thing for me is the... I had a period before it ended in terms of not working. So there was a lot of stuff, time where I've spent analysing a lot of what you would do at the end of a season, where you look back and you look at things that you could have done well, things you could have done differently, what you would do different next time. I think the beauty for me has been looking at what the top teams do. I started to do a lot of that in lockdown because so much of my time was spent watching Macclesfield rather than Man City. Do you know what I mean? So you learn to sort of start to prioritise other things. And then I think the big thing for me now is obviously with the Euros being on, it's a perfect summer to help keep you occupied, you know, without being able to go away and that sort of thing. It's perfect now to be able to sit back and try and enjoy watching some top football, but be ready and refreshed for once it starts again, especially for James going into that new challenge.
Guys, who's your money on for the Euros? Got a particular country you feel we're going to win it? And Ross, are you just going
to... Well, obviously, where we're not officially allowed to bet, I haven't been into a bet bookies and put a bet on. But if I was allowed to, let's just say, for argument's sake, that I was. My money was on Italy. I put it on Italy. I don't know if I outright thought that Italy would be the ones to win it, because I think it's very difficult to look beyond France. But always try to have someone a little bit outside of the direct favourites. And Italy were, if I were to put some money on it, were the ones that I would put it on.
And James, where's your money? Not that you put any money on, of course, sir.
Yeah, I think Spain will be dark horses. I enjoy Spain, the culture, the philosophy of their football. So I enjoy watching them. I personally think if England get to the semis, we've done well.
I think the way we started is great, but I'm with you. I think we are still, unfortunately, a semis team as well. I'm afraid that as much as I want England to win, I don't think we will win it, but I'm with you on France. And for me, Spain, you can never discount those, can you? So what?
I think Belgium might do something.
Yeah, Belgium are good.
I think they're going to get past the... Yeah, because they only got to the quarters before, weren't it? And I think they're going to...
I think Belgium are a little bit like we were years ago, weren't we? Everyone kept talking about our golden generation and the Lampard, Gerrards and Rooney's and everyone else like that, is that the quality of their players that they've got, they can beat anybody on their day. And I think, like Bro said there about us being a semi-final team, I think if or when you do get around those stages, when you look at our match winners now, we are capable of going on and beating anybody because of the talent that we've got. And I think... certainly the way he set the team up yesterday, I was quite shocked with it. But when you look at it, they look quite organised, quite solid. I think we've with like Phillips and Rice, they make it's quite organised and disciplined. He put clearly put Trippier there because he felt he may be a bit more of a solid defender and rely on him for his set pieces. So there's a lot of thoughts going into what he's trying to do. So I think there is an outside chance, but like I say, we're not one of the ones that you pick out straight away.
And there's the playing for each other as well. I think I thought they were playing for each other well yesterday.
No, it's good. Yeah, very good.
So you're watching the Euros. You're enjoying, no doubt, James, you can have a beer for once on a Friday night and not have to worry about the effects it's going to have on your body on a Saturday morning. Ross, your garden's immaculate now, no doubt. And that time you've spent, what are your thoughts on the current season in League One and League Two? Are you tipping Cambridge, James, to go back to back promotions, and or what's your initial thoughts on
League depends One where and they two? Play me.
I was going to say, is the ink dry on the contract yet?
No, I think Orient is almost, I keep saying, when I sign for Cambridge, I say it to everyone, it feels like there is a new cycle now for Orient. There's a new manager. There's going to be a lot of a new faces. So it's almost the end of a cycle and start of a new one. So you never know. If a lot of faces come in the building quickly and blend together, then obviously the size of the club and the ambition of the owners, that they should have a good season. For me, myself, and for Cambridge, it's probably myself and the club have a point to prove about being capable to play in League One.
I think with the leagues in general, I think it's going to be interesting. I think obviously what COVID's done to some of the clubs and the approach that people have. So I touched upon it earlier about Morecambe and the promotion and the Cambridge promotion, is that some clubs, will they still be as wild with the way that they want to spend? Will a club like Salford, of clearly they're capable of spending still, but will they keep doing it, or will they, you know, sort of screw their loaf a little bit and try to be practical a little bit more? I think we have to bear in mind sometimes that a club of that like that have spent the money that they have. There's always going to be a little bit of a hangover with some of the players that they've got. And they've obviously turned managers around a couple of times. So it'd be interesting to see if the players that Gary Bowyer's got there right now are the ones that he particularly wants to work with. But if they're not, it's very, very difficult to turn that around. So I think it could be, again, quite another evenish league, dependent on the ones that have come down, etc. And again, how they invest and kick themselves going again. I think League One's a really strong league. I think there's obviously some really good teams that have come out of the Championship, but I think in general there's a real good, consistent level of team across that league. So it's another one, really. Obviously, you're going to have the obvious big boys that are going to sit at the top of it just because of the scale of what they are. But I think across the levels, I think there's a real good standard now. It'd be interesting to see. Look, I mean, what Bro said there is really important for Orient this year. I think with a manager like Kenny Jackett, the club are going to invest. They're going to spend money. I don't think Kenny would be there if they wasn't. He's going to go for a certain type of player, isn't he, in terms of experience and players that are going to be able to, or hope that be able to push on and get them around the top end of the league and hopefully get promotion. So it's certainly exciting, and it's another summer of bundles and bundles of players. Loads of new staff, loads of new people come in, and it'll have a completely new look about it, won't it, once the season starts again.
And are you two like excited fans? I can't remember how many times I've looked at Twitter today to see if we've signed anyone. I'm 52 going on 12. I'm terrible. I can't help myself. And do you get like that with, when, you know, James, are you looking, thinking, who are Cambridge bringing in? And Ross, are you constantly... Or because you've been inside the game, are you a bit more relaxed about it all?
I think from my perspective, I was a bit like that when I was a manager, waiting to see who we were going to sign, making sure we got them over the line and knowing who we were going to be working with. But I think the other side of it is I try to I'm not a Twitter user, although I'll probably be the first one on the Cambridge Twitter page moaning that Mark Bonner's not playing Brophy at left back, but that's a different thing altogether. But no, I think from my perspective, I try to update myself every couple of days. Yeah. To begin with, Darren, I've got to be honest, I was having a look every couple of weeks and thinking, bloody hell, I didn't know he'd got the sack, or I didn't know he was going there, because I just completely shut myself off from it. I didn't want to know anything about anything, really. But now, with a bit of a clearer look at it all, I spend every two or three days just going, right, who's gone where, try to have a bit of an idea on who's signing who, and or who's trying to sign particular players. So, and also, the stage we're in now, to try and find out where James Brophy's going, where Connor Wilkinson, Danny Johnson, people like that are moving to, because they're players I care about and the lads I want to see do well, whether that's staying at the club or moving on.
See that Tristan Abraham's went to Carlisle today.
Blimey, yes. Long way away that. Didn't know that. There you go, Karen. I ain't done my 2-day check yet.
Sorry.
And James, do you pay a lot of attention to it, or are you just sort of focused on what you've got to do and where you are?
No. I like to see who's gone where. Just out of interest, just out of being nosy. I suppose I'm a nosy guy. But more so, like Ross said, I like to know where the people that I hold close to me are going, whether or not they're staying at a club or whether they're going to Pastures New.
So where is Loz going? Sorry, James.
No, do you know what? I'll defend Brophy on this one. He's a nightmare. Because as long as we've both known him, he plays everything close, keeps everything close to his chest. So it's not even a case of sitting on the fence. The time that he disappeared and ended up in Chile, I know full well that boy's capable of ending up anywhere.
I think the politest thing to say, and I mean it politely, he clearly is a character, the fella, isn't he? He's clearly somebody that you would love a good night out with, let's put it that way. So, you know,
hopefully not honest, too far out the environs of Cambridge then, maybe.
to be honest, Darren, Brophy would be the best qualified person to talk to about them nights out, let me tell you.
I've heard one or two things from James's dad, and so I'm looking forward to one of them eventually. I don't know if my tender age, my liver will be able to hold it out, but anyway, enough of that. And so you're all played, and you've all been involved in this game now. And one thing I find always fascinating as well is when you're an out-of-contract player and it's not gone well, James, it went well for you, yeah? Ross, you will get another job of that, we're sure, because of the stature you hold in the game now. But you've got guys that are perhaps 33, 34, have not had a good season, they've been released. And then the other end of the scale, you've got lads who are 17, 18, they've been released. What's it like to be in that situation? And do you have a lot of empathy, and do you sort of try and speak to a lot of these lads, and what's it like? Can you share that with us?
Yeah, I think Brophy probably really qualified, because we've had a lot of conversations over the summer, and I know how edgy Brophy is about his future and making sure that he's settled. So I won't go into too much because I'll leave that one for him. But I think it's a difficult one. I still speak to lads like Charlie Lee, who are at the back end of their career, but love playing, want to keep playing, want to have another year at it. So like you said, it's a case of like, do you uproot and move away from your family, like someone like Chaz has done, to go and play down in Yeovil for another year? Or do you drop down a level because you want to stay at home, and, you know, but that obviously impacts your earnings and stuff like that. So I think there's so many different angles to it. I think lads at that end of the scale are always going to be offered and have opportunities to continue to pick up a few quid if that's the way they want to do. The opportunity to go and play bit part or go on a coaching staff and that sort of thing once they get to that stage of the career, obviously depending on the career that they've had. I really do fear and worry for a lot of those lads at 17, 18, 19, the Brendan Shabanis, the people like that that are yet to have a real profile. Yet to crack into a team and play regular football, not just at Leyton Orient, but, you know, a non-league level, et cetera, et cetera. So you're almost coming away and having to start again. And, you know, then what angle do you take? Do you go and try and play in the National League, in the National League, in a conference, North Conference South? Or do you look along the under-23s line where you've had 2 years at a professional football club as a pro footballer, training with pros every day? That might be your angle you can manoeuvre, but you're in a very, very vulnerable position. It makes it a very, very difficult scenario for them lads to be experiencing, because it's brand new for them as well. You know, the lads at the other end of the scale have lived it, the vulnerability of it, for most of their careers, whereas at 17, 18, 19, it's all a brand new experience. You can't come home from work one day and talk to your mum and dad about it, because they, you know, 9 times out of 10, they haven't lived that life. So I think it makes it really, really tough for lads.
Kieran's shooting off, so thanks, Kieran, for being involved in tonight's show. James, you've got obviously clearly lots of mates in the game at both ends of the scale. Do you ever see players sort of, when they're in that situation, do you ever sort of see a nervousness or an is that something that comes out, or to generally the lads keep it, you know, under wraps? How are people in situations?
Yeah, I think that comes from a lot of people's personalities. Like Ross said, me myself, I thought I'd had quite a good and consistent last couple of seasons, so I thought I was in a good position. I was still a nervous wreck for the last month, because I want to get sorted. I want to know where I'm living. I want to know what life is going to be like off the pitch as well as on the pitch. So I was a nervous wreck. I suppose I think a lot of people that I know that are towards the back end of their careers, they're players that have been in football their whole life and come through academies, and they kind of, like you just said, they probably keep it a bit close to their chest if they're worried. But it's almost a normal environment to them now, kind of being off in the summer and then just waiting for something to come up. And then if nothing comes up, you wait. I'm of a different personality. I couldn't do that. When I get to the back end of my career, if nobody's phoning up by mid-May, then I'm going to do something else.
No, that's very honest. I appreciate you wearing your heart on your sleeve.
So, I think some people that have progressed through an academy, all they know is football. So they're used to that environment, and they're used to waiting by the phone, and they know they don't really know anything outside of football. So they will wait until something comes up. Otherwise, they have to search during the season. Me and myself, I like to be settled and to know where I am. So I would never put myself in a position where this is what I'm doing.
Yeah, and like you say, I think it comes down to personalities. And I think I'll be very much like you. I wouldn't like that uncertainty. But I guess there's some guys. We had the pleasure of having Jabbo Ibery on. And Jabbo's just so laid back. You know, I can imagine Jabbo just taking it in his stride, whereas other lads will definitely. And when you're sort of in that sort of late 20s, early 30s, you've got mortgage, you've got children, possibly. It must be, I think, personally quite stressful for those guys, you know, when they've had an injury and they've been out of the game. Ross, you've probably had to deal with players in that situation and deal with characters
I think the other thing as well, Darren, is like Brof made a really good point there about his background, is that obviously he came into it very, very late and hadn't experienced professional football. So the opportunity becomes a different one for him. But then at the same time, you go back to what your experiences lean on before, and you can relate to being the everyday normal bloke outside of football. Do you know what I mean? And then the priorities become about like earning money, what your life looks like, how it impacts your family. It's not a bad thing, because it's what all people have experienced, but most people in football, that's all they've ever experienced. So I go through the same thing as well. People say to me, are you going to get back into management? Are you going to do this? Are you going to do that? And you go, well, I'd like to do this, or I'd like to do that. But if I don't, I'll go work. I'll go and get a job, because that's what people have to do to earn money. Do you know what I mean? And I think I find it really interesting that people can relax and cope and put things into perspective. I think a lot of lads in the game would have earned very, very well, so that does help, because it gives you that time to sit back and breathe and make those rational decisions of what you want to do, or what you want your career to look like. But when you haven't got that, you've got to go and earn money, haven't you? So it's making sure.
Yeah.
Exactly right, mate. So, and I think that's something I think that could get easily lost in football by people in it, by people out of it, is that we see all the glitz and the glamour and how it impacts everybody. But that's not actually the reality for a big, huge percentage of people that are involved in it.
No, and the lower league players, whilst they earn good salaries, no doubt, and better than the average wage, they're, you're not retiring from the game having a career in League One and League Two with millions in the bank, I would imagine. And no, you've got a I remember Neil Webb just missing out on playing in the Premier League and becoming a postman.
Postman, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Becoming a postman, whatsoever. I've just given an example of. So I always sort of, perhaps it's just my own background in recruitment and in the employment business, I'm always thinking these poor guys losing their job at 32, because that's just me being a bit softer. So it's interesting to hear it from James and you, Ross.
And I think the other angle to it, Darren, as well, is the bit that I noticed that, certainly going into management and coaching around the first team, was noticing the lads that are coming to the end of their career and start earning money that is relevant to somebody starting out in their career. Do you know what I mean? So they take their boots off and they retire, and then the next day they're earning what we would all class as an okay, a good salary, but it's a hell of a lot less, probably 20, 30 grand less than they were earning 2 weeks before playing football. Do you know what I mean? So, and then all of a sudden your career is restarting in a completely different way, on a completely different scale in terms of the salary and the learning that you've got to do and the experiences you have to go through, whether it's in coaching or some completely new industry. People are learning their whole lives at a different end of how you normally build it up. You normally earn less money when you're 18, 19, 20, don't you?
No, I totally agree. I mean, your optimum years as a footballer, correct me if I'm wrong, are probably 26 to 30 in your salary years. And in most work, in white collar work, it's probably 35 to 45. So it's a world apart, as you say, in that respect. And Christian, who's kindly set the call up, has come on. We've got we're an hour in. Lee, Jacob, have you got more questions you want to put to James and Ross whilst we've got the ability to do that? Have you got more stuff you want to ask the guys?
Yeah, I'll ask a couple if that's all right. I'll jump into Ross if that's all right then. I suppose you don't have to answer how you will, I suppose. What was the feeling like in that sort of last run of fixtures and obviously eventually parting company with the club that you sort of always followed?
Tough. I don't think we were, from a personal perspective, I don't think we were as bad as potentially was made out at the time. Points tally weren't great in that last little run, of course, but I don't think we lived through us getting murdered at any stage. I don't really remember being in a game where I thought we were way, way, way behind the opposition. So I didn't think we were too far off, but that's like I said, a personal thing that I've analysed. I think my opinion on the back end of that run and me losing my job was, I'd rationalised it was going to happen. So when the game finished after the Tranmere game, I had a feeling it was coming, whether it was that day or very, very soon. So by the time I got in my car to drive home, I pretty much thought I'd had it in my mind that it was coming, just for a number of different reasons. So not a nice thing to live through, knowing that you're probably going to lose your job. Do you know what I mean? But you try to rationalise it in your mind. I try to go to work every day and try to enjoy myself as much as I could, continue to do it to the best of my ability for as long as I thought that it would last. So, surreal. And change, because I went from, like, obviously always caring about Orient, and obviously I always will. But getting home and for the next few weeks, next little while, thinking I couldn't care less, to be honest. And I've got no shame in admitting that, because I think that's a natural reaction when something hasn't gone in your favour. Again, whether that's someone else's fault or my own, I think that was just a feeling that I had. So, lots and lots of different emotions. I think they've calmed down and settled down a lot now, which is natural. But yeah, not a nice thing to live for, of course. And I think the thing that I'm interested to follow on from what Darren's just conversation just had with Darren there is that for me, it's me. The criticism I will always get or not get from people will always be there. I think the big thing for me always is at the forefront of everything is my family, whether that's my mum and dad, my brothers, my wife and my children, is that they don't suffer too much with it, that they don't take too much of it to heart, that they don't overanalyze it. And ultimately, they don't worry about when or what I'm going to be doing when I go back to work.
Mm. Yeah, and I suppose it's been a massive learning curve, though, through like all the experiences and probably some experiences that no other sort of manager, assistant manager or coaching staff member would ever experience, really, in that sort of time span.
Yeah, and I think when you look at it, the whole club, you know, certainly experiences for me, I talk to people on courses and the people I'm in touch with through the game, and there's lots of different things that have gone on that you can revert back to that not a lot of people can call upon. But I think that's the same the whole way through the club, and I think you have to respect all the things that, you know, what since Nigel and Kent have taken over the club, the scenarios and the things that they've had to deal with, whether that's as simple as, you know, promotion, whether that's appointing new managers, whether that's obviously the loss of Justin, maybe that's COVID. Like, as a board, they've had incredible amounts to deal with, you know, since they've taken over the club. So for all of us, there was a constant new experience. But to be the person sitting there trying to deal with it on the job was hopefully something I won't have to live through again.
Yeah, and just one last one, I suppose. Despite sort of ending on that note, I suppose it's been a great sort of time, hasn't it, at the club with that National League Championship win and everything else that you've sort of experienced.
Yeah, when you leave anywhere, you're always going to do it at the beginning with a negative image, aren't you? That's I think that's human reaction. But yeah, incredible. Some memories that will be carried around. We've spoke about a number of them tonight, but I think back to dancing on the table at the Player of the Year do after the night after we won the league. I think of you know, the trips abroad, the big games that we've played in, the successes, dealing with some of the things that haven't gone particularly well, and ultimately for me the selfish moments of seeing players develop and move on and progress and perform is a massive thing. It's part of the reason that I started and continue to do the job, is because you want to see individuals do well. And then I think the other thing is as well that there's certain elements that no one can ever take away from me. You know, walking around Brisbane Road, I won't call it Brow Creek Stadium because I don't have to no more, but walking around Brisbane Road, hearing the crowd sing my name, and, you know, going to away grounds and listening to our away fans singing my name, to be bundled into the crowd when we score a late winner away to Mansfield, things like that no one can take away. So they're massive moments that are in the memory bank and will be always be called upon to look back with fond memories, really.
And the steward trying to remove you because he thought you was a fan.
Thought I was a little toe rag.
Sorry, Jake, if I interrupted you, my apologies.
That's all right. I was going to say, that's brilliant. Thanks, Ross. I'll let you get off now if you need to go.
Top man. No, good to see you all, chaps. Sorry, I got cut short, but I've got another engagement. I don't get many other engagements these days, so I better make the most of this one.
I'm sure they'll be coming soon. Good luck.
Look after yourselves.
Cheers.
Hello, mate.
We spoke about the overriding memories for you, James, and the time. Is there a future coach in James Brophy? Is it something? I mean, you're a young man, I know, and you've got plenty of career left in front of you. But are you thinking about life after football playing, or is that still?
No, to be honest, a lot of what Ross alluded to, the things he doesn't like, are the things that put me off coaching. I love football. I love analysing football. I love watching football games and seeing what teams are trying to do and breaking it down and seeing what they could do better. The vulnerability of football and how it would affect my life outside of work leads me to not wanting to probably go into that line of work once I retire. I enjoy the possibilities of doing other things, changing careers and accomplishing other things in outside of football, and being able to have a nice work-life balance, having a family, almost taking my kids and myself to watch a game of football as a fan would be quite a, it would be quite a nice feeling.
Because you know you're a proper football family as well. I know your dad had a pretty decent amateur career, didn't he? And then you've got a younger brother who by all accounts is one to keep an eye on for the future. You're clearly the standout, Brophy, at the moment with the National League Winners' Medal. And how do you help your brother along? Because it's great that he got you in that position. Are you able to sort of, you know, support him, or do you sort of tend to shy away and think, actually, do you know what, let him make his own way and his own mistakes? How do you cope with that?
Yeah, probably a balance. I suppose I got the real... Dad will try and stretch his amateur career as far as he can take it. I suppose I got the real first taste of professional football, so I like to give advice in terms of what he can expect, an eye opener, because it was an eye opener to me when I first come into it. It was not what I expected at all. I'm completely different. However, I try and let him do his own thing. In terms of he needs to enjoy it, and he needs to do what he thinks is right. I always think there's nothing worse than following somebody else's advice and then looking back and regretting that you should have taken what you thought was the right decision. So I like to give him just advice in terms of what he can expect out of things, but the choices that he needs to make, I like him to make them himself.
I think, James, that's the most important thing for young players, though, isn't it? They've got to really find their own way. Too much peer pressure, they're going to stop enjoying it and fall out of love with the game, isn't it? So...
Yeah, definitely. I think I made a point when I first come to Orient that I suppose the back end, the first few months of that season with Swindon, I'd completely lost an interest in terms of what I was getting out of it and why I was doing it in the first place. And I come to Orient, and even though we were on a bad run, it was a refreshing change to actually make me realise why I was playing football and what I got out of it.
Because I think when you sometimes hear players say that, when I was the younger me, would have thought, how can you not love football? How can you not? You're doing the job we all want to do. But the older me understands that. I do actually understand that. Now, I get that it can be a drain. It can be just a job, and it can be something you can fall out of love with. And you clearly have been there. You've been through that stage in your career where you've had the lows, you've had the highs, and yeah, you're able to pass that advice on to your younger brother, which is great. You know, he's a lucky boy to have somebody in the family that's doing what you're doing and the level you're doing it at. He really is. You know, I'm sure he hangs off your every word, James.
You've been at Orient quite a while, and I know you've talked about being settled for. I suppose how is that going to be? I suppose it's been a little while since you've walked into a new change room, and that was Orient.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a nervousness to myself in terms of experiencing that change. I think it'd be nice to have a change of scenery. There's not often, or in many careers, you can say that you get the chance to move to different areas, locations, and to experience different things. So I'm looking forward to that part for sure. But there's definitely a nervousness to me because, like you just mentioned, there's probably quite a few seasons have gone by, pre-seasons, where I've not had a change of team.
Yeah, and I suppose in terms of you mentioned the cycle, I suppose it's sort of come at a time, hasn't it, where this group of players that have been through so much together are all sort of leaving at the same time, and it's probably almost a bit fitting that is happening, and it's a new era for Orient and a new era for all of you players as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people were there from near the start of when the owners took over and we were in the National League. We set out to get promoted from the National League, which we achieved. And now the kind of club has consolidated itself in League Two. And now it's almost like you just mentioned, the end of the cycle. And now it's the start to push on and to get out of League Two, which hopefully they will too. But I'll leave that to the new players to do.
That's it. That's brilliant. Thanks, James. I mean, all the best at Cambridge. Obviously, love watching you play for Orient. And fingers crossed, Orient will be playing against Cambridge soon enough in League One.
I hope so.
And just from me, yeah, I think you'll always be known as the Ginger Pele down at Brisbane Road. So, again, thanks for your time and every bit of ounce of sweat and blood and tears you put into
it,
James.
Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for having me. I smiled earlier. I just want to say that I smiled earlier because what you said was the exact thing I said when I won't name the player. I went into Swindon and after about 3 months, we used to come in at report at 9:30 and he used to come in with like a defeated attitude every day and with like a sulk that something had happened already before the day had even started at 9:30. And I said to him, how can you not love being here? Like, you literally get in to come here, you get to go here every day just to play football, and that is it. That's all you have to do for today. And I think his comment was to me, wait until you've been in it 5 years. I've been in it now 7. So there are times for sure where I get like that. But every time I feel like that, I say to myself, think back to before it.
Yeah.
And yeah, the reasons why you're here. Yeah. And how lucky you are to be in this environment, because it will be gone. And when it is gone, you'll be regretting not enjoying it as much as you could have.
And I'm sure you've given your brother some great advice listening to what you just said there. That's so true, James. I remember driving down the road once, feeling sorry for myself. It was absolutely bucketing down. I looked round and there was a guy next to me in the traffic digging a hole. And I remember thinking to myself, you know what? You ain't got it so bad, sunshine.
Yeah.
So it's great to hear you. James, thank you so much for giving up your time this evening.
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
James, thank you very much for the memories you've helped create. Good luck, Cambridge. Good luck with your future. And remember, once an oak, always an oak.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
No worries.
Lee, have you got any updates on Paul that you could perhaps share with us, the Paul Linger and the GoFundMe page that you'd like to perhaps put you on the spot, Lee, but if you've got anything you want to add?
Yeah, Paul's been back in hospital. He's had an infection. He's not been too great. He's still fighting through. We've got the shirts going. The shirts are on sale. The Jamie Vardy shirt, not on sale, on auctions. Jamie Vardy shirt. And the Aston Villa shirt, they're still on auction for a few more days. We're just trying to get a bit more money for him. Hopefully, like I said, he's fighting. So, as long as he's fighting, there's still hope.
And you know, just on behalf of everybody, thank you for what you're doing. It's commendable. And I, for one, admire you.
Like I said, I just... He played a part, like I just said to James, once and always and I felt like that our fans would want to do a little bit, and thankfully they're all putting their hands in their pocket, and hopefully, like I say, he'll have a good little time with his kids, right, and for as long as it lasts.
Yeah. Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure. Jacob, nice to have had you on, and hopefully we'll get you back on soon. Thanks, guys.
Thanks to you, guys.
Take care.
Cheers. Thank you.
Bye.
It ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. There's flats in every corner of the ground. You can get your kids in just £5. Get an orienteer. It's only a quid. Get a cup of tea, but there ain't no lids, cos it's an up to pop. Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. We had an FA Cup 78. We had John Sear, that is most irate. We were club reviver, but we don't care. We had checkered shirts, we had Chris Tate's hair. I remember the moment that Lee Spill scored.
It's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. This is St. Arts and Pub, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world. Till the end. If I thought you'd score, but I haven't seen a goal in God knows when. And I wanna hear rocking all over the world again. Cause this ain't Arts and Pub, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. Cause this ain't Arts and Pub, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. Yeah, you're gonna hear rocking all.